Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, my guest today is a professional performer whose shows involve a unique mix of media. She's not an actress. She's not a comedian. She's not a dancer. But she may be all those things and more. She's a master storyteller. And this is a performance venue that's not that well known, but it is an international form of entertainment. And there's a, you know, network of people who go all around the world performing artists, being master storytellers. Her name is Victoria Burnett with Stories That Sing. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to have you on. Victoria is from California. She's here in the studio at WETS in Johnson City, Tennessee. I guess the way to start off is just to ask you to describe what you do, Victoria.
Well, I'm a storyteller, but I try to incorporate all the gifts I believe that I have, that God's given me. And that's because my parents are always said, you know, use everything. If you've got it, use it. Use them all. And so I incorporate stories and music and movement together so that whenever you come to hear me present or share the stories that I have to give, you're always going to hear music running through that. I believe we just turn off the music. We've turned off that ability, and we don't think about it anymore. But the music is always running. It's always there. There's always a song, at least in my head, of the character. The characters are always singing. So that's why I like to incorporate the music and movement, if I can, within the stories. And that's what makes me unique, I think.
Okay. So I have to tell you that when we were just setting up the show a few minutes ago, Victoria was warming up her voice and she was singing. And, you know, as I said, she's a multimedia artist. I guess we may hear a little bit of the singing later on. I don't think we'll see much of the movement since this is radio. But you said it's unique. I mean, so that's not a common thing among storytellers to do song and various other kinds of forms of communication in their storytelling?
I'm glad you asked me to clarify that, because no, I don't mean to say that I'm the only one doing it. No, there are storytellers that sing, they incorporate music, but a lot of times when they do it, they stop the story and say, okay, well, now join me in this, or they start with a song and then they go into a story. Hmm. Many of my stories have music that are woven through it. Hmm. And so I try and hone the story in such a way that both mediums are so powerful that you can't separate them. So you have the story, and then the character sings something. Or as an audience, the audience has to sing back a line of a critical feature of the story or a critical point of the story. So they're woven, they're tightly woven together. And I don't really see a lot of other storytellers doing that. I mean, yes, there is music, so I'm glad you asked about that. And they do sing. Others do sing and do it well. But I think mine is a unique gift.
So, Victoria, you mentioned movement. How do you weave that into the story? Is it just walking around on the stage, or is it a dance, or are you enacting the characters in your stories, or how do you do that?
Well, a little bit of all of those things. But I don't use the D word, the dance word. A lot of times, I find, at least in school settings, sometimes boys are reluctant to the word dance. Let's dance. No. So it's easier to say movement. Okay. So sometimes the movement, yeah, will be a dance. But usually, it is a movement that responds to something that is said within the story. For instance, there is a line in one of the stories that I tell, and the story's called, She Got Hard Head, Don't You Know? And at the end of it, there's a line that says, so the word say. Now, not says, but so the word say. It's a Liberian tale. So Whenever I say so the word say, I ask the audience to pound in their hands the so and the word, and then on the word say, they throw their hand up in the air. So they are waiting for that. They're always going, so, the word, say. And so those sort of things, that's just movement. Or I'll ask them to clap in a certain spot. Or I'll ask them to click. And so they have to do something that is constantly engaging them in the process of story. It keeps them connected. And actually, science has proven that when you involve more of the senses than just the auditory, it causes deeper levels of learning to occur.
So I mentioned that you're from California, and I think you grew up in Washington, D.C., and I think I recall you saying that your father had been a preacher, and what you're just describing sounds like call and response, kind of in a congregation, sort of a preaching setting, and I see you're kind of agreeing.
Yes, I am. Oh, yeah. I had no idea that that sort of thing culturally is just in my DNA. I happen to be African-American, and most people think that, you know, African-American churches, you know, there's a hooping and hollering and going on, and, you know, there's a lot of call and response. And yes, there is call and response, but I grew up in a church that there was call and response, but there wasn't a lot of the hoop, you know, instant spirit sort of thing. It was, my dad would say, you know, are you in agreement? Or he'd say, you know, can I get an amen in here? And everybody was amen.
Yeah.
Yes, I did grow up with that, but it also just is in my DNA. I expect a response. I sort of look at you and you've got to give me something. So, yes, I believe it's important and I do incorporate it in most of my storytelling. My dad was a preacher. I always want to say, I'm reluctant to say preacher because he would say, no, I'm a minister. Because he was more of a teacher, a pastor teacher. Hmm. And he had more of a teaching style.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he felt the Spirit move, so to speak, you know, yes, he would respond, and his response would be more fervent. But he wasn't really, as we call in my community, he wasn't a hoop and a hollerer. You know,
yeah.
He would always say, I really believe in having some meat on the bones. So make sure you give whatever you do, Victoria, that's what he used to call me. Please, whatever you do, if you decide to do the storytelling or the singing, make sure that the words have substance, that you're saying something.
Yeah.
And that people can go home and feast on what you've given them.
Yeah, okay. So he was the type of minister who emphasized the content more than the style and
absolutely,
the performance.
Absolutely, dutely. Yes.
And maybe more the preachers emphasize the style and the performance over the content.
Correct. And you know, and
they could be reading the phone book, but as long as they're doing it in the right musical way.
That's right. Then people respond. Yeah. And my dad always thought that was a sad thing. He said, think about what people are saying. Think about what you hear. And don't just gobble it all down.
Mm-hmm. So. Good. Well, I can see the roots you came from led you to what you are and the kind of style you have. Well, you said earlier that you're an African-American, and you mentioned to me earlier that you went to Africa to learn from storytellers there, and so I guess that's part of the research you're talking about on a grand scale. But so what did you learn, and how did it affect your storytelling style going to Africa?
Well, I haven't gone all over Africa yet. One of my goals is to go to all of the places I want to go. But one of the first African nations I went to was South Africa. I went to South Africa. I went to Johannesburg over 10 years ago to harvest post-apartheid stories and to also speak with some storytellers there, just to share my stories with them. And I got to do that through an organization called People to People. And it was an exciting experience. I got there. I got to interview. I got to listen to stories. But some of the more impactful stories happened for me in the venues where it was over dinner. It was when I had snuck out at night and gone to, you know, someone's hut.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, don't do that above all. Don't. It's dangerous.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, what happened for me is I did know someone there who took me to really hear some of the stories that I may not have heard at the university level in that nice, pristine room. And many of the storytellers on the university level or who came to share there had been prepped, and they were also kind of uncomfortable. You could tell this was out of the element, and they told us this privately. They said, normally when we do this in our homes. We're sharing a meal, and I feel uncomfortable.
I feel like I'm in a laboratory.
Absolutely. And so I snuck out with another good friend named LaRon, and he and I got in a cab, and we met our friend, and he took us behind the lines. Well, we had the most glorious time. We went into someone's home that was literally a small hut with a dirt floor, and we ate roasted grubs and onions that was roasted right over a fire.
Well, I'll have my grubs medium well. Thank
you. And they pop so juicily in your mouth, if that's a word. I love making up words. Yeah. You know, mixed with the onions, it was delicious. And we had their homemade beer. But the best part came when the father told a story. And then the mother told a story. And then I asked one of their three children if they would tell a story. So it was lovely. And afterwards, the father, after I'd shared my story, he laid hands on me and he said, "You're a master storyteller. We are so honored to have you at our home." The term master storyteller has to be bestowed on you through somebody else or by someone else. The rule within the African culture is that you can't just call yourself that. Hmm. You have to be given that title.
Okay.
And that was the first place I was given that title.
Oh, really? That particular title, master storyteller? Because I thought that was a Western, you know, performing circuit concept.
Yeah, yes and no. Yeah. Yes, it is a circuit tale. And after you've told some, but some others have to bestow that on you.
Okay.
So that was the first time that I'd had an African storyteller bestow that honor. And he gave me a special memento of my time there, which I'm wearing today. I'm wearing my bangles.
Well, that must have really given you a special feeling then to be kind of anointed by the originators of the whole kind of genre, huh?
It's a wonderful validation of who I felt that I was, but when others recognize the study and the commitment and the passion that you have for it, and they call you a master storyteller, then it really means something.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with my guest, Victoria Burnett, who's a master storyteller, and she has her venue, if you call it that, called Stories That Sing. In fact, you can look her up online at www.storiesthatsing.com and find out all about her. But we're going to ask a little more about her here on our show. Well, who are some of the other people in your audience's kids? I mean, I think you mentioned
absolutely.
Schools.
I have school-age kids, so it's everything. I love preschoolers. They're so open, but they usually have the attention span of a gnat, so I have to tell a story that's about that long. So I go from ages, I'd say, 4 to, you know, over, you know, 80. You know,
okay.
I love sharing with older people as well.
Well, why don't you give us a short taste of what you call a type of story. Just, you know, give us a taste of it.
All right. I do like to open with a song, so I think I'll do that. Now, and I'll tell you ahead of time that we won't probably go through all of this, but this is a story that I absolutely love called The Legacy. We are weavers of the story. We are keepers of the word. Every story is a treasure. Every story must be heard. Every story must be heard. There once was a tribe of people who knew their purpose. Oh, best beloved, it is a good thing to know your purpose. And this tribe respected their history by constantly recording and reading it. This tribe respected their voice or their language by speaking it to each other. This tribe respected their future by passing on their stories to others. This tribe respected their dignity by recognizing that there was a power greater than themselves. But as time went on and the wonders of life grew boring to them, they began to forget those things and they began to question, why do we really do this? Oh, those are so old-timey. Our songs are just so old school. Our stories, too. We've got a new tale to tell. Let's tell our new tale and let's not talk about the olden days. Those are hard to digest anyway. Let's just tell our babies that they're on a path to the future. They don't have to think about where they came from. But there was one, an ancient one, who was so old that most people had even forgotten who he was and how old he really was. But they did respect him, for it was said that he used to be quite the talker back in the old days. He was their village storyteller. But as he had gotten older and was approaching the age of 100, he stopped talking as much and he started to demonstrate how he felt his tribe had gotten off the path by the way he lived. He began to do things to show them that they should not forget their stories, should not forget their songs, should speak in their own language. But no matter, they still thought he was a bit odd.
And that was cool. Victoria, I can tell from that it's not strictly entertainment. I mean, you try to communicate something in a larger sense through your art. I mean, is that always part of what you're doing?
Always. Sometimes I'm hired to communicate different things, but my hope is also to cause a hunger and a desire in my audiences to tell their own stories, to keep their culture alive, and to tell it with dignity and to respect the rights of other cultures. If they're going to tell different stories, to respect their culture by doing it in a way that is respectful and not a way that diminishes who they are, the other culture, in any way. So that's one of the things I like to do. I also like to promote connectivity and focusing on how we are alike. And the ways that we're different, it's okay. You know, I'm different and that's okay. And you're different and that's okay. Those are the things that I'd like to do to bring about, a culture that will connect with each other and that will see people for who they are and not just the outer layer, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that popular culture, movies to some extent, but in particular TV, have made us more and more passive over time. Does your work try to counter that dumb passivity?
Yes, and to question, but in healthy ways, to question and to have a different perspective about things and people and to be willing to do the research to see if what you're being told is truth or plausible even. I think that's one of the wonderful things that storytelling does. It allows you to deal with difficult questions. It also allows audiences to see that the answer to those questions may be multiple. It's multiple perspectives. And in doing so, you can develop more of a, I want to say kindness, but, you know, my family used to call it showing mercy to people that, you know, sometimes people are just, you know, we're not perfect. Hmm. And so we say or we do ignorant things, and learning how to respond to that in love and also in kindness, but also in a way that is impactful enough to change that other person's perspective on what they think or believe about something, you know.
Do you also teach storytelling?
Yes, I do. And I call it applied storytelling. And we apply the storytelling to life. I had the privilege of teaching at a private school in San Juan Capistrano for 15 years. And it was a joy to be there and teach storytelling to children. I had a class for third graders because it was a lot of writing that was involved, a lot of research. And then there was performance. So we applied the storytelling to their life. We talked about how a storytelling affects your life. And they learned quite a bit. My eighth graders were exciting. It was just exciting to work with them as well because they were preparing for college papers and their interviews. And We talked about how doctors, when you go in to see a doctor, if you ask them where they come from, they need to tell you their story. And part of whether you believe them or not is based on what they tell you, you know, whether they're qualified. Unfortunately, some people don't ask doctors enough questions.
Sure.
But these students did interviews with each other. They also interviewed for jobs using storytelling. And using many of the skills that they learn in my class. I'm happy to say I've received a few letters from students who have graduated from that school and told me that they were so happy that they took the class because they were able to clearly articulate and to connect with the interviewer because they had some storytelling skills.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's an effective form of communication. So what's the lifestyle like for a performer in your field? It's not like you're a rock star and you know, running around in your private Gulfstream.
I might be. You just don't know me.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. It's not like you've got, you know, a retinue of servants following you and catering to every need and all of that. And so is it constant touring? Is it, you know, you're on your own and going from place to place?
Well, yes, it can be. But you can set up your schedule for that. Yes, I think for me, it's an exciting life because I never know what calls or what things I'm going to be asked to do. And one day I may be telling stories at a hospital to children who are taking chemo to get their minds off of the chemo, or they just after they've had the chemo. Mm-hmm. That's a special project that's close to my heart because I am a cancer survivor of 23 years now. Mm-hmm. But then other days I will be asked to travel outside of the country. I just returned from Liberia and I worked with teachers there for 3 weeks. And I shared with them the importance of storytelling, which shocked me. This is an African nation, a West African country, and they speak English. They understand and love the Western, you know, our Western ways.
Yeah.
And but I thought that they would not have given up their own cultural commitment to storytelling. And I was hired to come in and went in with an organization called God's Kids and taught them for a week. And then we went to their classrooms and we incorporated storytelling and movement and music in their teaching styles, and it was exciting. So I never know, in answer to your question, yes, I don't ever know where I'm going to be. I'm grateful that I can travel at this point in my life, so I'm in museums one time, and then I'm in schools another time, and I mean all levels of schools because my certification covers K through high school. And the teaching was wonderful because, you know, my teaching skills, I bring that with me as well. So I never know where I'm going to be. I can say I'm just open to opportunities, and I go where the doors open. So I've enjoyed the journey, and I'm excited about continuing that.
You've been so many places. Does anyone stand out? I mean, what's, if you can even focus on one, what's the most interesting or challenging or enjoyable kinds of venues for you? You've named, you know, you've described a few things, but is there one that's really jumped out as being like a real life-changing kind of super memorable experience above all the rest?
I love performing in all types of venues, as I said. But the one that stands out for me was recently I was in Las Vegas, and I was in a special needs class, and there was a boy there who had a type of autism, which caused him to respond in inappropriate manners when he wanted to connect with you. He didn't respond in a traditional kind of way as raising your hands or calling out, that sort of thing. And I didn't know that. You know, I just came in and we did our stories, and I opened with a with an African song. And at the very end, there were three teachers who came up with this child, and they were crying. And he was mouthing the song, Funga Alafia, and he was singing. And in the 4 years they'd had him at that school, they had never heard him sing. And he was moving. The movement that I taught them that goes with the song, he was doing that. And they were crying because they had never heard him sing, and he had never appropriately moved or responded
connected
in that way. That touched my heart. Even now I'm welling up because it just made such a difference. And it affected me so in letting me know how stories can just change a person and can teach a person. So,
well, that's a neat story there. What do you see as the future of storytelling as an art form? I mean, I kind of view dance, for example, as something that was so far under the radar for most of our culture in the U.S. And, 10 years ago, nobody knew the difference between Argentine tango and the Paso Doble, but two TV shows have made such a difference. So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars. If there was such a thing for storytelling, it would make a massive difference. There's not now. There may be in the future. But what do you see as the future of storytelling?
I think it's coming. I just hope I'm around long enough to be on that stage with them and share. I really think it's coming. There are wonderful shows that are out. I love Lake Wobegon. It's just a story. You know? And that's on radio. And there's many, many followers from that. But there is a movement within our culture, which I'm loving. I've seen a lot of it on the East Coast of spoken word. And the spoken word genre is allowing storytellers to come in. And so whenever I'm in town, recently I was in Washington, D.C., and my sister said, come on, we're going to go hear some poetry. They're going to do Paul Laurence Dunbar tonight. And so we went into this wonderful club. And there were people. I was shocked. It was well over 500 people had come out on a Wednesday night to hear Paul Laurence Dunbar and other original poets reciting their poetry. And then they had an open mic time for about an hour, right at the end. I signed up and I did one of my spoken word pieces called Hold My Mule While I Shout. It's a very old African tale, quote, I should say. So I told that, and then they wanted to hear a story. And I can't tell you, there's something going on that it's gaining momentum. I don't know what's going to happen with it. There's more use of the word storytellers or storytelling within media. So I think something is about to happen, and I'm hoping that things are going to kind of turn around and people will return to our oral traditions and just taking the time to listen to each other. I'm hoping they'll do that.
Yeah, just for the connection, just for the...
Absolutely.
For the resurrection of culture,
maintenance of culture. That's right. Children have forgotten. They don't know how to listen, you know, and if parents would help them with that too, that, you know, we'd all appreciate it.
Yep.
Especially teachers.
Thanks to all of you for listening. My guest has been Victoria Burnett, Master Storyteller. Again, it's www.storiesthatsing.com. You can find out more about her. Appreciate having you on, Victoria.
Thank you so much.
Hope all of you out there will tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.